Hello and welcome to a special edition of our Movies podcast with Mark Kermode. Regular listeners will know that nothing could please us more than being able to say, as I'm about to, hello Jason Isaacs.
Hello boys, how lovely to be here.
Oh, I mean, if only we could do that.
I know.
Every week.
But I do it. I just am, honestly, I swear to God, I've been in castles in Spain. I've been in a recreation of a Nazi death camp. I've been breaking people's legs in Rhode Island. I've been in the strangest places. I can't tell you. I've been in the wings of the theatre. Been
That can't go down well.
No, well, sometimes I like to zone out, not hear the audience, you know, when they're coming in and stuff. But I know I've just been in some of the weirdest places in the world, dressed in odd costumes, about to rape or be murdered or whatever the hell it is. I once did it with machine guns pointing at me. I was doing a play with Lee Evans this time last year, and I used to jog up and down the Mall just before we opened. And I ran unwittingly through a place which I don't think the public meant to run through, and people actually lifted their guns
at me. Well, like Buckingham Palace, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I was listening to you guys saying hello to me. But anyways, it's absolutely delightful, but I don't listen for that because I'm a mad keen fanboy. So you'll be dragging me off here with a hook.
So what happens when you go back and listen to the podcast of today's programme?
That's like a rip in the space-time.
It is.
I don't know what will happen.
It's like you can't have two doctors together in the same place unless they're doing the Four Doctors serial.
You can't. So actually,
I think we should say hello to Dave, though, because I do know Dave, and I tell you something, he loves it as much as I do. Not the fact that you say hello, but he loves the show.
Do you want to say hello to Dave Morrissey then?
Dave, wherever you are, mate, it's fantastic. Come in. If you're anywhere nearby, get on the bus.
No, he's been on.
The problem is he came in for a horror movie, which I enjoyed very much, but Mark...
It was rubbish. But I did tell him it was rubbish.
I'm going to tell Mark what he's rubbish about in a minute.
So exactly, but the thing is, the problem with that stuff is, if somebody says to you, and I would cite the example of Mel Smith when he was in to talk about Black Ball. And, you know, if Mel Smith says to you, what do you think of it? You can't say, yeah, I thought it was really good, and then he'll open the paper the next day and see one star. Or whatever. Yeah, also... You know, he got the movie made. He'll get over it just because I don't like it. I mean, look at my run with the box office.
Well, I'll tell you honestly, I heard you last week, obviously on the podcast, because I don't listen occasionally, I always listen. And I heard you say that you have no influence on people. Actually, you have influence over the people who listen to your podcast. I don't think that they do go and see a film if you hate it. I just think that that's
the majority of the population. Some will do the exact opposite. And if Mark... They just know that they have different tastes. And if Mark slags something off, they'll go and see it. And if he really, really loves something,
I listen because he infuriates me invariably.
And I am screaming at him.
He's so wrong about so many things, but it's very entertaining.
Because normally it's down to me to tell him what he's wrong about. So what is he wrong
about? This is like two against one. If we're going to get into the school, for those who don't know, you know, Jason and I went to school together. We weren't, and this is a point of debate.
Well,
either.
Now,
you see,
honestly.
we didn't know each other. Well, we knew of each other. We were in the same class together, right? And in my version of events, Jason was just far too cool for me.
Well, see, I come out very badly from this. Because
you don't come out of it badly.
Mark was the in crowd. He was the epicentre. He always dressed rather coolly like that. He always did his hair in a way that was way beyond our years. And I would look at him from afar, surrounded by this little entourage, and think, if only I was in that gang. And occasionally I was in that gang. But he remembers that I don't know what
I remember it completely the other way around.
I think you want to paint yourself as an outsider.
No, I mean, I honestly, look, I would love to have been anything but that. I would love to have had friends and influence people. I would love to have been the guy who
Do
had...
you still speak to anyone from school?
Well, you, but I haven't seen you, obviously, in 20 years.
Okay. Only in a podcast sense. So he says hello to them, but doesn't expect them to talk back.
Well, I've said it before. It's a bit like meeting a porn star, those people who go to the conventions. I feel intimately acquainted with both of you, but I haven't spent any time with you. And I'm rather nervous.
How do you feel about that, Simon, being
equated to a porn convention? What happens at a porn convention?
I think people go and get things signed by people who they are biblically acquainted with, but only by themselves.
Right. And bear in mind, Mark...
I'm guessing.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Just essential research.
Yeah.
We are talking to someone who has been voted one of the 13 sexiest men who are real and alive.
One of the 13?
Yes.
Was I number 13?
Lucius Malfoy, the character, of course, from Harry Potter, was one of the 12 sexiest men who were never alive.
Ah, that's nice.
So you're sexy alive and sexy never
alive. But sexier...
But
as
just
Lucius
one of the other
Malfoy.
Things, because I have to get back to it, one of the things that you are sometimes fantastically entertainingly wrong about...
Here we go.
...is that in a really cheesy way, I know quite a lot of people that you talk about sometimes. I've met them. They're not in my speed dial list, but I know them. I've worked with them. And when you guess what it is that has contributed to a film being terrible or good, you very often attribute it to the wrong person. In fact, you very often attribute things to actors and we don't deserve it.
Give me a hard and fast
I'll give
example.
You the opposite example of what I just said because that's how
you see, that
fickle
means, that
I am.
Means I can't give
You're
you an
so wrong about Pirates of the Caribbean and Johnny Depp in it, particular in this aspect.
Johnny Depp
gets a part and is offered a part, as he often is, in giant blockbuster films, all of which he turns down. He decides to take this cheesy film about a Disney ride. It's going to be unbelievably normal and dull. And he perversely turns up with a bunch of gold teeth and plays it like, you know, plays it like a gay Londoner who's staggering out of heaven at 4 o'clock in the morning in 1975. And the studio go ballistic. They beg him not to do it. And he says, fire me or put up with it. And he's the guy that elevates this film from being a, you know, a film for the family to this huge juggernaut. And that's why you don't, he doesn't deserve props to Sweeney Todd. He deserves his props and his Oscar nomination for that film.
Excuse me. Okay, and firing back
this is great because I'm feeling I'm having my work done for me by the Golden Globe nominated.
No, excuse me. Here's, here's how this
the
happens.
Non-Golden Globe attending.
The person, the person that I cite in that is Gore Verbinski. Now, two things. Firstly, the studio were right. Johnny Depp's performance in that film is terrible. It is the performance of an undirected man.
It's the reason why...
It doesn't matter. Hey, listen, that may be true. Smell-o-vision may be the reason why some of those films took money. It doesn't mean it's any
good.
No,
they don't. I tell you, I did the Robert McKee course a few years ago in London.
What, about smell-o-vision?
I know, about, you know, formulaic structure, so we thought. A bunch of British people went to do it, and we went really to make fun of him and tell him, who the hell are you to come here and tell us how to write films? And he came out and immediately disarmed everyone by saying, I know nothing about making films. You're all thinking, if this guy knows so much, how come he hasn't written giant blockbusters? And you can write whatever films you want. But if you make a film nowadays, despite the marketing and the hype and the McDonald's Happy Meals, that ends up making $500-600 million around the world, it's because it has somehow resonated with the audiences, because you can't hype things that big. You can't make teenagers want to see a film 20 times.
Yes,
something in it hits a good... You can't. I there aren't films that are that successful without somehow hitting a chord. It might be a chord we don't like. It might be something misogynistic. It might be something violent about mob rule, you know, something, some kind of revenge fantasy, but nonetheless, something about what he did in Pirates of the Caribbean elevated it from what their projections were to something 10 times bigger and turned it into a global franchise. And it's his performance alone.
Something about what he did. Something about what he did resonate. It resonated with the increasingly stupid gene which is taking over the world. What Johnny Depp did was, and I stand completely uncorrected on this, he dreamt up that performance. He came on set. Gore Verbinski went, what? It's Johnny Depp. Fine. The studio then may have said, you're not doing that. Gore Verbinski.
Take your teeth out.
Gore Verbinski would
up.
Never once have said to Johnny Depp, Johnny, you know, stop doing that. Because Gore Verbinski couldn't direct traffic. He is an accountant. He's a bean counter. I mean, if you look at the rest of Gore Verbinski's oof, it is the work of somebody who is putting tab A into slot B. And my problem with Johnny Depp in that film...
Oh, bean counter.
What?
Chris Columbus.
Yeah.
I worked with him. He did the second Harry Potter.
And of course, we've discovered that there is a flaw in my Chris Columbus, is that
he wrote Gremlins.
That's
right. Yeah. And he's also... I know everyone. He also, I think... Is that, well, apart from the fact he's a lovely fellow, that doesn't say anything about
he's
an artist. No, he is an absolutely delightful fellow. But when he's there, he's completely creative on the set. And when I turned up on Harry Potter, I thought, well, this is the guy who directed all those films. It's going to be, I'll be slotting into an American box, but I'm happy to be here. In fact, he went, what do you want to do? What do you think the scene's about? And he gave me complete creative freedom, as he did to all the other people. And the reason why the franchise hasn't collapsed under its own weight and expectations is that each time it's got better and better and bigger audiences. After number one, there'd be a terrifying thing to make number two. Number two is even more successful. They continue to be more successful every time because he actually got lovely performances out of people and tells the story well with the camera. Now, he might choose to tell cheesy stories when he's not doing Harry Potter, but he did Harry Potter incredibly well, I thought.
I think that what he did with Harry Potter was he did a terrific holding job, and the minute that Alfonso Cuarón got hold of it, suddenly he went, thinner book, perhaps, but just generally, properly work of somebody who understands cinema. As far as the bean counter thing is concerned, look, you can be a creative accountant, you're still an accountant. Chris Columbus.
Yeah, but you've got to come and do some set visits and see what someone's like with actors and with story.
No, because
you know Aliens versus Predator.
You know what happens?
Yeah. Aliens versus Predator. This is Mark versus Jason. This is even better, and you can watch it online because it's
visits,
all there.
Set visits are the worst thing that any film critic could do because what happens?
Because you know where to attribute blame or success.
No, it's like trusting the tale rather than the teller. You know, there is a certain degree of detachment that has to exist in these things for them to have any resonance at all. I spend my entire life talking to people who see films that are rubbish and they're going, well, yeah, but the thing is, and you know what it is they spent 3 weeks on set.
Yeah, and you've got to like someone, I see that.
And it's fine, and you know, I was on set of Split Second and I thought the sets looked great and the flooded London looked great and it had Rutger Hauer and it had that woman who ended up being the woman out of that programme that's incredibly successful, you know, what's her name? Thingy Bob. Not Desperate.
Give us a clue, more than that, surely.
Kim Cattrall. Okay. Kim Cattrall. At that point, she hadn't been in Sex and the City, right? Which I haven't seen because of television. But she had been in a thing called
Something else.
No, no. Bridge to Paradise. Bridge to Paradise.
Okay.
Yeah, which was about people being taken by the Moonies, and she was very good in it. And I was on set, and I thought, how can this not be good? It's got Rutger Hauer, it's got these sets, it's got this stuff and the thing, and I like the producer, and I like the director, and the film comes out, it's rubbish.
Yeah, because it's almost always the script, and very often you attribute to actors, and some of the people I've worked with...
Generally
the industry attributes to actors things that they just don't deserve. A lot of the people who get a lot of praise, including myself often, really don't deserve it. Some of the people who will be nameless, because I'll never work again, are monumentally untalented, that you credit with having made decisions about their characters or story.
I know you can't, it's on the
name anybody because I'll never work again, but nonetheless a lot of people I know who are just not only awful people face to face but are just terrifyingly wrong in every creative decision they make. They are steered around and edited around and they end up getting credit from you, and if you'd come to the set you'd have seen what monstrosities.
So there are people that I have praised who in your opinion don't deserve the praise,
in anyone who's met them.
You see, no, but this is interesting. It's lovely to hear it from this side, because usually the thing I get is there are people that you've slagged off that don't deserve the slagging, although frankly they made the what
ultimately I had to put my hand up in my own show just to get in here. Ultimately, it's down to the actor to choose the script, though, isn't it? If you choose a bad script, it's your fault.
Well, you've got to work. I've got two kids and a mortgage, you know. I mean, I know a lot of people. Dave got a lot of stick for doing Basic Instinct, too.
It did what he not from us. Do, you know? Not from you.
True. And he was fabulous, isn't it?
He was.
And boy, did he work out.
Yeah, he did. That scene
and all the evidence was there.
It was all on screen. Yeah. That film's very, very entertaining.
And sometimes you take something and the script changes, or, you know, there are rewrites come and they're not in your control, or, you know, whatever.
Yep. But performances, regardless of words, are down to it. And I have quite often seen movies in which I have seen actors doing their very best with a very poor film.
Of all the things that he's been wrong about...
What's the wrongest
he's ever been?
He mispronounces so many names.
But again, examples.
Milo Jovovich.
When did I ever
Viggo
say
Mortensen. Milo... I don't know. I mean, how
Viggo
long have you got? The show finishes
when
at 4
did
o'clock,
I ever say Milo Jovovich?
Oh, no, I've got, I showed you. I've got all your podcasts here.
Milo Jovovich.
I am the
Jason's got all the podcasts there.
Write down the name of somebody whose name I mispronounce.
Oh, I can't remember. I have a very poor memory.
Okay, but you see, and then I'll read it after. Here's the people whose names are difficult, right? Scarlett Johansson, because as my friend Nigel Floyd says, just because she can't pronounce her own doesn't mean that that's the correct pronunciation.
Fair
but enough. Hey, it's her name. That's how it's going to work out.
Now, can I just point out at this point, Jason's got some television to mention. This is the
I'm not leaving. Right. Oh, he's not sure because the film program starts.
No, I'm
in Steptoe and Son. It's on very soon.
No, not that.
Fantastic.
Brotherhood,
the second series, is on. I just commissioned the third series, actually, while I was in America last week.
But anyway, you're staying put. You're not going anywhere.
Oh, yeah. No, Brotherhood's on right now. And the DVD will be out. It's just marvellous. And it's on nothing like this.
Excellent. There you go. Right, so we'll do more with Mark, and we'll do more with Jason Isaacs, who's here. Really, really is here. And you can watch it all online.
But he's sexier if he's not here. Number 12 if he's not.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Thanks for all the emails. We were talking movies between now and 4 o'clock because Mark Kermode is here, Dr. Mark Kermode, and Jason Isaacs still here. Hello, Jason.
Hello.
Does this make me the only person in the room with a PhD? I'm just checking.
I've got a D-lit.
They gave me something when I did a law degree, not an NLP, but when I left drama school, but I was too stoned to remember what they gave me, I think, at the time. So.
Have you not been given anything?
6 months.
It's got letters. I got a job.
Community sentence, usually, isn't it?
Fair enough. You also say hello to David Morrissey, which we've done. Hello to all members, past, present and future of Fairport Convention, Pentangle and Focus. I forget why they all get
the Yardbirds,
but they do. All members of the Yardbirds, whose bassist Paul Samuel Smith promised a fascinating behind-the-scenes email this week, but hasn't sent one yet. Hello to Ken Branagh. Even though we don't say hello to Ken Branagh until he's been on the show, but we're saying it anyway. I'd like to say hello to Rory Bremner, who told me he was a fan last week. And hello to Michael Caine, to whom we don't normally say hello, even though he listens all the time and is said to have an almost scary stalker-like knowledge.
How do you know that?
I just do, because it's my show.
Oh, what is it?
And he's got a computer screen.
The voices in your head tell you that, or is it true?
It's true. A teaser, just before we get lost into other things, from Trudy. Quick question. I think this is an interesting one. My son is 11. He's being teased at school by other boys because he has not seen such films as Chucky and Aliens versus Predators.
Okay. Rightly so.
Exactly, at the age of 11. Can you suggest some films that are not complete bilge and which might give him some street cred amongst his peers? He normally likes manga, Spirited Away, Howl's Moving Castle, comedies and some adventure films. Jaws is a favourite. Your recommendations. So these are cool,
right, well,
street cred... for 11.
But can I just say, straight off the bat, if he likes manga and he likes the Miyazakis, then he is way cooler than people who are going to see Chucky, which none of the Chucky films are that good, except for Bride of Chucky, which is quite funny, but for completely different reasons, and Aliens vs. Predator, which is just rubbish, is a terrible film. Actually, the coolest thing in the world is to be somebody who's... I mean, I know a couple of, you know, kids around that same age who are obsessed with the Miyazaki films, you know, with Howl's Moving Castle and Spirited Away and Castle in the Sky and, you know, Princess Mononoke and...
He likes those.
Well, if I tell you that, I'm sorry, is the most credible thing. Like, if you put me in front of a bunch of kids and said, "I saw Alien vs Predator," I saw the Miyazaki back catalogue, and I just went, "There's the new one instantly." Miyazaki's son, Goro Miyazaki, who just directed Tales from Earthsea, and it's a fascinating DVD. And there's a whole feature on it about how his father stopped talking to him because he didn't think he was up to the task. And it's really good. If he's into manga, if he's into the Miyazaki stuff, he is cool already.
But if his friends are into horror films, surely that's the Exorcist.
Nobody should see
but
the Exorcist.
Can you see Chucky?
So they've seen it because they're not meant to. Rightly, he is not being taken to see movies which have got a certification either. And can I just say again, soapbox, a great abnegation of responsibility. Stop showing your kids 18 rated horror movies.
They don't do it, do they? It's brothers, it's older brothers.
Well, brothers, stop showing your younger brothers 18 rated
horror movies. I saw the Exorcist when I was about 11 and it traumatised me for decades.
Right, so if you're 12, 11, so let's say 12s are sort of possibly acceptable.
The Miyazakis.
Anything that Jason's done.
My kids are 5 and 2. I can tell you about 5. The Harry Potters. I don't know how much street cred you get from watching.
They're 12 now, aren't they? Yes. That's fine because it's 12A. So yes, that's very good. I mean, actually, they are.
Lord of the Rings,
brilliant. Yeah. All the Lord of the Rings. In fact, also the original Lord of the Rings with the cartoon version is quite hip to know about because it's Bakshi, and you know, if he's into manga and animation, it's an interesting kind of connection in there.
Right.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank and just drawing my back catalogue.
Peter Pan, which is very dark, is phenomenal. I think it's great.
Because I think the source material is fantastic and we're very faithful to it.
It's a very, very good film, which apparently you told me was a huge flop. But
The box office was not artistic.
But it's a fantastic piece of work. It really is. Very good.
So, let's work through our back catalogue and see if we can help Trudy on this, of everything that you've done.
No, let's not do that. I think if the other kids are watching things like Chucky, he's never going to have street cred. He should have street cred by being confident in his own choices and who he is and not thinking that he needs to watch films.
By walking around wearing a T-shirt that demonstrates that he knows about manga films. He's not watching stupid American Dumbo, you know,
Armageddon.
I bet you those Armageddon. I don't think he'll ever also watch
Let's
that,
drill
I'll
some holes.
I'll tell you
holes.
What, I'll bet you his mates are waking up in the middle of the night going into their mum and dad's bedroom going, "Mummy, can I sleep with you?" Because Chucky's in their head.
Divorcing Jack.
No. I haven't done any films that are appropriate
the
for 11-year-olds. Very much not. I don't think that 11-year-olds can watch it.
Dragonheart was a great film.
Dragonheart was a lovely film.
But they won't get him street cred. He needs severed limbs. He needs something, you know, kind of...
Event Horizon and Black Hawk Down aren't going to do that.
I like Event Horizon. It's a 15 or an 18, isn't it?
It should be, an 18.
Can I show you my impression of Jason Isaacs in Event Horizon?
Go on.
It doesn't... No, hang on. It's ex en ferris. Tutame ex en ferris. It doesn't... Now, it doesn't mean... What's it? It's the best line of the phrase. It doesn't mean save us. It means save yourself. Big pause from hell. I like that film.
It's true. You've got a lot of bravery there to do that in front of Jason Isaacs.
So it was a very mild Irish accent. I said, "Can I do it Irish?" The producer said no, so I did it anyway.
There's just a hint, isn't there? There's just a little smidgen of Irish.
Very slightly.
Okay, so Trudy, I hope that's been sort of vaguely useful. Jason wasn't much use on that. So the Jason Isaacs back catalogue, not really very useful.
No, but the entire Miyazaki back catalogue and, you know, the entire Ghibli back catalogue is brilliant. And if the kids on that already believe me, you are cooler than those people you are trying to be cooler than.
Can he watch
they
the
don't
Godfather?
Know nothing. Mm-hmm. No.
Can he watch the Godfather?
No.
They're 18s?
Yes.
What do you know?
Of course he's
tell your kids
you know,
five, I mean,
Lord of the Rings has got people chopped up and stabbed.
No,
and
the Godfather, even if it was recertificated now, would be at very, very least 15. No, it must be 18. Must still be 18. It was always an X-rated thing. The Godfather was one of the things that people at school, when you and I were at school, would have a paperback of The Godfather and a paperback of The Exorcist, and they would both fall open there was a certain point in both novels. Well-thumbed pages.
A lot of people want to know if Jason can come on every week.
I'd love to be on every week.
I suspect you might
have to phone in from places because I do travel a fair.
And the other thing which people want to know is what your opinions are on U2.
You do the band?
Yes.
I don't do that kind of lighting a lighter stuff, but I like all his charity NGO work.
Right, and the music?
That means they're rubbish.
Yeah, no, I'm not into guitar bands, really.
You're not into guitar bands, so what are you into?
Guitar bands.
R&B and divas and people. I'm basically a gay man in a straight man's body.
Yes, and you had...
When it comes to music.
Yes, and you also had intimate relations with Daniel Craig on a regular basis.
I did have sex with Daniel Craig on stage every night for a year, and I can see why he's James Bond. He's a terribly, terribly sexy man.
Yeah. We'll do a box office top ten in just a moment. And in West Wing, would that your brief appearances in West Wing, would Trudy, would they be good for...
I told you this about Brotherhood, though, which is on now, and not to segue into a plug.
I had to go and do
an edit and a dub of Brotherhood in case it needs to go out on network television in America because of the writer's strike. It's extremely violent. It's full of a lot of swearing and a lot of sex and a lot of very adult stuff. It's an hour-long episode, and I don't know what they've got left because they've got a version of it to put out. It must be 4 minutes long because I had to, you know, there's a lot of melon farmers in there and other things like that. I can't imagine what kind of surreal Lewis Carroll stuff they've got left.
You'll
watch that version of it.
It's series two, which is starting on FX.
It's on FX already, actually.
Right,
it's mid-season.
But the writer's strike is a real problem, though, for series three, isn't it?
It's a writer's strike. It's a problem for everybody in Los Angeles, yeah, not just the actors. And nobody is making any drama whatsoever in America. And the horrifying thing is that the networks have hardly seen a drop in ratings because not only are they doing reruns, they've launched a whole new raft of reality shows.
TV shows.
And the last time there was a writer's strike in 1988, the same thing happened. It was the birth of reality TV as we know it. And they're just commissioning them, you know, up the wazoo now, and
which
it's a
does
scary
demonstrate.
Thing for all of us.
Are you surprised it's gone on quite this long?
No, because we're striking for very good reason. I say we, because the actors will be striking for the same reason if it isn't resolved satisfactorily. No, they're striking for a very good reason. In fact, they're rather nobly striking for a future generation, because they've all lost more money now than they were ever going to make from a new contract. But they're doing it so the principle of ownership and authorship is established that if, you know, because all content's going to be delivered on the internet soon, radio, television, and everything else. And so if you write something and it's downloaded a billion times, you should get more money than it being downloaded 100,000 times, like people who write books and stuff. And they would like to give the writers a flat fee, or in fact, nothing, and have and be able to exploit it for free on the internet. So,
is it going to be sorted in time for the Oscars?
They say it's going to be sorted soon. I think they'll get a waiver for the Oscars if it isn't sorted. I hope that it is sorted satisfactorily because I don't want to go on strike. I'd like to get on with shooting something.
But you won't cross a picket line?
I wouldn't know. That's I went out to the Golden Globes a few weeks ago. I wasn't going to go to the ceremony, but I was going to go to the parties, and I was going to go on the picket line in my tux. And in the end, I was at home having Chinese takeaway, watching it on telly because there was nothing to go to.
No, that was a shame that you didn't win, though. Wrong decision.
No, I was never going to win. Jim Broadbent should have won. He's absolutely fantastic. But it was great for the State Within, the people who wrote it, that it got nominated because it was a very classy series, and it hopefully encouraged the BBC to make more intelligent drama like that. You
know? I got lost.
Did you?
I did get a little bit lost, but I went back and worked it out. But it was
complicated,
multi-layered.
It was complicated, but it was a pretty accurate look at what diplomats do.
Mark. Mark mentioned last year words to the effect of "I'd rather do anything." This is picking up on a couple of themes we've already mentioned.
All right.
I'd rather do anything than watch Pirates 3 again. A few weeks later, he said, "I'd rather do anything than listen to U2." Would Mark therefore, given the choice, listen to U2 or watch Pirates 3? Yeah. Answers in no more than 5 words, please.
I would. How much U2 do I have to listen to?
Well, that's already
same
well
length.
Out of five, surely. That's double figures.
Same length, then, yeah.
OK, I'd rather listen to U2 because it's easier to put your hands over your ears than block out a whole film.
Mayo at bbc.co.uk. More with Jason. We'll do the box office top 10. Will you join in that?
Bit? I would love to, but I can't be rude about anyone, of course, because they might employ me. So if I go silent, you know that I don't like the thing.
Will you have seen the top any of the top 10?
If they're suitable for five-year-olds, yeah.
Just before the travel, let me tell you a couple of online video treats available from the Five Live website over the next couple of days. The interview with Cloverfield director Matt Reeves from earlier in the week can be viewed in a couple of hours' time. And Jason and Mark's Blarney from the South. Blarney or Barney? Well, both, actually, available will be there from Monday. But you can watch it live online at the moment, and we'll do some box office 10, more on Brotherhood, and some more of your recommendations of movies that are cool for 11-year-olds who want to argue against the Chucky lovers.
Yeah.
Who really, clearly have been
Chucky
brought up by bad parents.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly.
Or bad brothers.
Are.
Yeah.
And you have...
My older brother showed me The Exorcist, and he showed me all kinds of terrifying things that I'm still bearing the scars.
Great text here. It's from John in Wolverhampton. I don't wish to sound picky, but to quote Jason, a gay man in a straight man's body... is a gay man, surely.
I like the music, is what I'm saying.
From Ian, this is cool movies If you're 11, you want to observe the law, or most of it. Movies to be into. This is for Trudy, who wanted some help. Wizards. Time Bandits.
Bandits, yes. Nice.
The Adventures of Baron Munchausen.
Yes.
Edward Scissorhands.
Lovely. Yes.
Donnie Darko, although...
No, Donnie Darko must that. Be... Donnie Darko must be
grown up, surely.
That's must
15.
Be 15.
It is a 15. Well, at the bottom it says, I know some are, Jack 15, Anderson. But I think they're tame 15s. It's a new category.
Oh, I see.
Stand By Me. What about Stand By Me?
Yeah, it's a great film.
Metropolis.
Yeah,
the Annie version, Brazil, and 12 Monkeys. There's a little running theme going through.
There
some
is,
of
but
those.
If you're going to watch Metropolis, do not watch the Metropolis with the new pop soundtrack, including the songs by Adamant that was put together by Giorgio Moroder in the 1980s, which is pants and a half.
Pants and a half.
Yeah, it really is.
Three-legged pants. Rolf Harris pants.
It's Jake the Peg.
A number of people asking, Jace, were you in Saving Private Ryan?
No, very much not. I was in Crash and I was cut, though, talking of which.
Would that be
you?
Yeah, I had a fantastic scene in Crash. Superb.
Just how fantastic were you in it?
Paul told me, phoned from the editing room, he said, I love this scene with Donnie, but it's the whole movie right there and I don't need to do any of the rest of it. It's like a short film by itself. It just doesn't belong in the film. I went, that's OK. Thanks, mate.
Saving Private Ryan, not OK for an 11-year-old.
No.
Not
that first 20 minutes.
That's, and again, that's at least a 15.
Really? Well, my kids love the sound of music. Yeah. They're small, but Mary, they never ask what the
But if you're trying
are.
To argue an argument, you know, you've got an argument going with kids at school, fellow 11-year-olds who've seen Chucky and they've seen Aliens versus Predator. No,
you're never going to win. You've got to have your own confidence and self-esteem's got to be high enough to go, they're the wrong films for you to watch.
Exactly.
I'm not interested in watching rubbish like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
You're not going to out-gore them.
No, you're not. And, you know, anyway, there's no point in that. Just rise above it.
Or hit them.
Because that works so well.
That's because you've been in Brotherhood.
That's because, yeah.
That's what you would do in Brotherhood.
That is certainly what my character would do.
Jason's written a note here which says, I have to plug good with Vigo.
Yeah. Because I'm very, very proud of it. I just come from the producer's office.
There's Viggo Mortensen.
That's right.
He was in a film with Scarlett Johansson.
We'll do the box office top 10 in a moment, but tell us about Good.
Well, it's not coming out imminently. It's just that it's a film that I'm incredibly... I love and I'm proud of, and it's a film we were trying to make for 6 years, Miriam Siegel, the producer, and I... Vaguely.
Miriam Siegel?
That's right. The very same one that you used to know.
Used to know.
And she was so tenacious. The money fell apart lots of times. The whole production fell apart. She set up in Berlin. We were about to start. It fell apart. And Showtime, for whom I make Brotherhood, released me during the season twice to go and make this thing with Vigo in Hungary, and it's a sensational, really intelligent, subtle, beautiful film about the 30s in Germany. It's based on an award-winning play. Good. I say to you like you go to the theatre. But anyway, it is. And it will come out later this year, hopefully all over the place, but certainly in Britain. And
Mark says that
really
Viggo Mortensen is
film.
The new Robert De Niro.
He is.
He's a really... he's an artist, actually. Yeah. I tell you, when we made this film, he travelled around Europe by himself. He gathered bits of music and material and brought us all stones from Auschwitz and bits from antique shops to decorate the set. And he made a kind of montage on the wall of the makeup trailer. And he works from some kind of emotional, non-intellectual sense. It's a real marvel to behold.
It's a genius.
Mark in Teddington. Hello, Mark and Simon and Jason.
Hello, Mark.
I enjoy the show enormously. As a recent convert, I wondered if you had ever done anything on great individual acting performances inside not-so-great films. Or, to put another way, given that we're in the awards season, best performance lost in a turkey.
Mm.
So to get the ball rolling, this is Mark in Teddington's suggestion, how does Mark's actor of the moment, Viggo Mortensen, fare for his performance in G.I. Jane? Also, are there any...
I remember being in the cinema, right, with G.I. Jane, because G.I. Jane is the Ridley Scott movie in which, you know, Demi Moore goes to war. Basically, she becomes...
Demi Moore goes to the gym.
She goes to the gym and she shaves her hair, right? And the first time you ever see Viggo Mortensen... Viggo Mortensen, thank you, from the horse's mouth, and I'm not calling you a horse. Viggo Mortensen comes in wearing these ultra-tight, skimpy shorts, right?
Well, he comes in
with this little kind of village people-like tash, and he's got the aviator shades on. And he stands there, he's got this fantastic line in which Demi Moore says to him, she starts saying something, and he says, when I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. And the guy sitting next to me, who is, you know, who's a gay man in a straight man's body, literally, when Viggo came on, went, oh, my word, and just spent the whole of the rest of the movie wondering where he could get that pair of shorts. That's not a bad film. I mean, there are things in that film that are, you know, that are punchy in front. The scene in which Demi Moore actually shaves her hair is one of the great Mondo moments of modern cinema.
Anyway, so we're talking about best performance lost in a turkey.
I can't talk about turkeys because the people who made them might offer me a job next week. This is very difficult being on here because I love to slag things off. But I will say this, though, when you get nominated for something, which has only happened to me once in my life, it's sort of an embarrassing thing because you're always really nominated for having a great part. You know, these people who were nominated this year are some of the luckiest bastards working in film because they got fantastic parts. It should be, and an award for best part goes to. the person with the most disabilities, go, you know.
You might have noticed that there are fewer reviews than normal.
Keep going.
So here we go. So box office top 10. We're going to try it. We definitely have to do Cloverfield. Definitely have to do Things We Lost in the Fire and Penelope.
Okay, fine.
This is guaranteed done before 4 o'clock.
Okay, fine.
Box office top 10 with Jason Isaacs joining in if he's prepared to say anything. If the silence, then we all know what that means.
Yeah.
At 10, In the Valley of Elah.
Well, I've never forgiven Paul Haggis for cutting Jason out of Crash, so it's gone down, man. In my opinion.
No, it's a lovely man, and it's not an Iraq film. The problem with all these films that got labelled Iraq films and no one went to see them is then most of them aren't about Iraq, like John Cusack and stuff, and they got kind of swept aside, and it's a gorgeous film.
Enchanted at 9.
Loved it.
Me too. My kids adored it.
And
I was singing the song.
Yeah, film for kids that parents will love. And
perfectly
it's not,
well done.
Not
could have gone horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Charlie Wilson's War is at number 8.
It's half a good movie. I just want the other half. I want the other half about what happened after we had accidentally armed the people that then became the cradle of terrorism and it all went terribly wrong. And I'm still not entirely sure that I can get over a movie in which the cheering of the shooting the Russians down out of the sky is not countered by something. I mean, the thing is, from the Russian point of view, Afghanistan was their Vietnam, and we now live in a world in which films like 49th Company is showing how lousy things were from the Russian point of view. It just seems, I mean, I know the politics of Mike Nichols and I understand the politics of Tom Hanks and the rest of it. I just wanted more than that. In the end, it's a character comedy and not more than that.
Haven't seen it.
I was waiting.
I know you've got a lot of reviews today. I'm watching the clock, the camera.
Yeah. It's all right, it's fine. No, but if you watch the clock...
There we go.
Watch the clock, people will assume mugging.
But you see what I mean?
But there's a difference.
No, I can see that. Yeah.
If Jason mugs to the camera, he just looks great.
No, Jason mugs to the camera, it's just a normal story. It's a busman's holiday.
Alvin and the Chipmunks at 7.
I laughed, you know, himself from Radio 1, James King. I was about to call Jason Lee. Laughed. I mean, it's rubbish, but I did laugh.
Yeah, all those Elmo videos for years put me off seeing anybody doing a helium-induced falsetto.
Elmo's great, though.
Elmo! You hear that across the room, you don't want to get out of bed.
Do that again.
You know, how you doing, Dorothy? And you go, oh, I can't, please switch that thing off.
Hiya!
Oh, no, I've started him off.
It's the only one.
It's the only one he does.
It's so good.
That's either Fozzie Bear or Douglas Hurd.
Yeah. Ask him to do Jeremy Paxman. Go on, do Jeremy Paxman.
I Am Legend at 6.
It's not as good as the original two versions, and I don't believe that Bob Marley has any role in that film at all.
I only like films that Roland Emmerich makes about destroying New York.
Yeah.
St. Trinian's at 5.
Rubbish. Everyone should be thoroughly ashamed and know there's no excuse.
Haven't seen it, and the director lives in my street. I see him every day.
Really? Tell him off from me, because that is a film which even Toby Jones, who is normally the kind of the gold standard of lifting things up, even he can't lift that turkey.
I know Jodie Whittaker, she's in good. She's a lovely actress. She was in it. She had a great time. And Arlie Parker, who lives in my street, is a delightful fella.
Just as an exclusive
Me, the film's rubbish. Yeah.
As an exclusive for webcam viewers, you can just nod or shake your head. You have seen it.
No, I haven't seen it. Genuinely, I haven't seen it.
That's not much of an excuse.
I was hoping to invite the premiere. He lives like 20 doors away. Nothing.
Why do you think that might be?
I think I was away.
Nicely done.
I was shooting in Spain.
No Country for Old Men at 4.
It's going to win the Oscar for Best Film. It's a very good return to form for the Coen brothers, back on the territory of Blood Simple, and it's a very, very fine piece of work, and I like it very much.
Simple, gorgeous, gory, you know, genre piece from them, and I stopped my parents from going the other night, thank God, because they thought, yeah, because my mother can't bear the pinprick. She would have vomited and run out of theatre.
Well, as you'll know, we've been talking a lot about movies to go, you know, that you've gone to see with your parents, which have been a mistake. So I think if you'd gone, wouldn't have coped with that.
No, they can cope with it. So they've seen me on stage naked doing all kinds of perverse things. But I think
what was the first play they saw you in?
They saw me castrated with a cheese wire.
That was the second play they saw you in.
The first play I was naked, covered in chicken blood. The second one I was castrated with a cheese wire.
That's a wonderful opening to your acting career. They must have thought, we're so proud of him.
My dad saw me shag Daniel Craig for 7 hours. And I said, what was it like? And he went, I don't know. I looked at the programme the whole time.
We're going to move on here. P.S. I Love You at 3.
You know, the film which the critics...
Jason Isaacs, he can get away with more than you and I can.
I know,
I'm just...
No, but it was the same in class. It was the same in class. He was the first person to ever swear in class.
We're reenacting Haberdashers.
P.S. I Love You. Come on, I'll get in trouble.
P.S. I Love You.
Rubbish.
The book's great, though. I haven't seen the film, but the book's
just
great.
Okay, well, I'm glad.
Okay.
Terrific. Thank you for that.
Not seen it, but I know somebody was going to cast Jerry Butler years ago and said, he's too young, but he's going to be a huge star, and she's absolutely right.
Aliens versus Predator Requiem at 2.
Much cooler to watch Miyazaki movies.
I saw the first one because my friend wrote and directed it, and he's a lovely man, and I thought he did a great job. I haven't seen the second one, yeah.
Sweeney Todd, Demon Barber of Fleet Street is UK's number one.
You know, I really like it. It's Tim Burton doing the Tim Burton thing, and Johnny Depp redeems himself for the Captain Jack Sparrow performance, which, as we know, is entirely his fault, despite what Jason says about studios.
I love Tony Newley for a start.
And yeah, there we go.
No, fantastic. Yeah, yeah. And also,
it's not R&B.
I had the trailer. Nobody's a singer. You can hear the lyrics, love. I had a trailer next to Helena Bonham Carter when we were doing the last Harry Potter, and she was in there working up to her audition. All I could hear all day was, oh. So I'm so glad she got the job, and I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, how did she get that job, do you think?
She told me there's absolutely no influence whatsoever. She had to audition alongside everybody else, and I have no reason to disbelieve her.
But the director's her husband.
Yeah, but they have houses next door to each other.
Well, that's all right, then. But it is the perfect role for her. She's brilliantly cast.
Why not? She's really good. Why shouldn't
you cast
people
you
get to go home and sleep with as well?
She's really great in it.
Which of you is going to come up first?
Let's start with Cloverfield, all right?
Okay.
Have you seen Cloverfield?
No.
Well, have you seen any of those? Because we could do... Look, any of those. Have you seen any of them?
Oh, all my crew made that from Brotherhood.
Right, so, no.
This is great radio.
No, he hasn't seen any of them.
I should go home.
Bye.
What a terrible show. I've loved being on. I love listening to your reviews. You're fantastic about all the kids' films. You're always right, and I love when you're wrong about the others, and thank you for having me on.
Jason, you can come back any time. You don't have to go, but if you haven't seen any of the films,
maybe. No, but I can say this. What I'm meant to be unplugging is Stepturn Son, which is on in a few weeks on BBC Four.
Look, do you want to... Look, stay for the news and sport.
Okay.
Then we'll do a minute on Harry Corbett.
Gotcha.
And then you've done your job.
And get out.
You've ticked the promotional box.
Okay.
The one debate that's still going, as far as listeners are concerned, is Joy Division or Concert Angels?
The other one sounds like a disease. Joy Division. Also, because I thought Control was lovely. And now I at least know the words to some of their songs.
Yeah, okay. I really like Control.
So Jason's just going to stay for another couple of minutes just because he has to fulfil his promotional duties.
It's true.
Before he has to go off and do other stuff. So fulfil that promotional duty. The Harry Corbett thing is an interesting show.
It's a story about Steptoe and Son off screen, what they were like, because they did obviously Kenneth Williams last year and it was very popular and very successful with Michael Sheen. And the thing about Steptoe and Son that I had no idea, you know, I remember the colour versions in the mid-70s, which were the kind of shambling end of the run, but when it started in black and white, it was kind of Beckett-like almost. And it's because Harry Corbett, believe it or not, was Britain's top actor. He was known as the actor's actor. In fact, he was known as Britain's Marlon Brando. And they thought it was a huge coup to get him for this one-off thing, and then he signed up for what basically became the bane of his life. You know, neither of them could escape being trapped in this thing, but before that, he was a blazing leading light of the theatre and kind of independent... A film world.
And who are you opposite in that?
I'm opposite Phil Davis, Mike Lee, you know.
I can see that.
And I just saw it last night, actually. They sent me a cut so I can talk about it. And it's really interesting. I mean, it's a very low budget, obviously, but it's really interesting and really well-told story. It's from the guy who wrote the Fanny Craddock thing last year. And how great it is to make something in 2 weeks on low budget and just be a guerrilla filmmaking after those big films that I occasionally
after
get
those big trailers and...
No, anyway, so that I'm very proud of, and watch out for Viggo, I think, when Good comes out. If he doesn't get his Oscar this year, he'll get it next year.
So there's that, there's Good, which is the next movie that we see you in.
Yeah, yeah.
And Brotherhood, which is on at the moment, which is great because...
It's great because there's very few people writing for grown-ups. It's a complicated world about local politics and crime, but they're not big crime bosses, not operatic or gothic like The Sopranos. It's you know, it's full of the kind of grit and dirt and unpleasantness of real life and families and how dysfunctional they are.
Jason, it's been a pleasure.
It's been more than a pleasure. It's been an ecstasy being here, and I can't wait to listen to everything else you do, whether or not you say hello to me.
You can go back and listen to the podcast now and say hello to yourself. Say yes. Hello.
Dissolve
to
in a well of narcissism. I won't do that, but it's been lovely.
We do.
After all of which, what is there left to say other than goodbye to Jason Isaacs? Thanks for listening to this special edition of our films podcast. Normal service resumed shortly.